The release of Saudi Arabian billionaire investor Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal boosting the country's stock market on Sunday, but the after effects of a purge of Saudi Arabia's business elite may last for years. Al-Waleed, along with several other top Saudi business tycoons, were held for more than 80 days inside a makeshift detention center at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh as part of a corruption purge. It's widely believed that Al-Waleed, who was reportedly accused of bribery and extorting officials, bought his freedom by transferring a chunk of his vast fortune to the government.
A film about a Soviet-era sporting victory over the U.S. has become Russia's highest-grossing domestic film of all time. 3 Seconds tells the story of an unexpected 1972 Olympic victory of the underdog Soviet basketball team over clear favorites, the United States. The film's taken around $39 million at the box office and been seen by over 9 million people.
America is the place to do business. So come to America where you can innovate, create, and build. I believe in America. As president of the United States, I will always put America first, just like the leaders of other countries should put their country first also.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's January 29th, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another business day, another edition of The Opening Bell. Today on the broadcast, it's our CEO Spotlight. In just a few seconds, we'll bring in Taylor Rhodes. He's the CEO of SMS Assist in Chicago. A little bit later on, we'll do a wrap-up of Davos, the World Economic Forum. You heard President Trump there talking at the event as it wrapped up last week. Heather Long was there for the Washington Post, and she'll join us for a conversation about it later in this broadcast in our second segment. But first, your overnight intel as we head toward the opening bell later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are off about 25 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. As a matter of fact, everything is red on the screen this morning. Oil is lower as well at $65.99. off about 15 cents. In Europe, most of the markets there are lower as well, with the exception of the FTSE, which is up just a fraction. And in Asia, most of the markets are lower as well, with the Hang Seng off almost 0.5%, Shanghai off almost a full percent this morning in early trading. A couple of stories we're watching for you. Sales and profits picked up for companies at the end of last year, and more are paying their workers higher wages and salaries. It's the latest sign that the U.S. economy continues to improve. The latest encouraging signals come from the National Association for Business Economics. That survey, again, saying that most workers, most workplaces expect to add staff this year. The big problem continues to be finding workers to get into those jobs. Many of the Fed districts across the country having a hard time filling locations, filling those jobs with enough of qualified employees. Federal Copyright Board has raised the music streaming royalties that songwriters and music publishers pay by more than 40% to narrow the financial divide separating them from recording labels. Still ahead here on the day ahead, we have Commerce Department reporting on personal income and spending for December. There's also a few of the companies reporting earnings today. So a busy day ahead, a busy Monday ahead in the world of business. We begin this morning with the CEO Spotlight. Taylor Rhodes is here. He's the CEO of SMS Assist. Taylor, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks, Steve.
Nice meeting you as well. I've heard and read so many wonderful things about SMS Assist, and you're in what, month nine of your CEO-ship there?
Yeah, 9 months. We moved here. I moved my family here in May of last year.
How's it going?
Well, this is my first winter in Chicago, so you know, it's much colder than South Texas was. Mm-hmm. But we love Chicago. I moved my family up here. You know, learning a new business, learning a new industry keeps you hopping. But so far, so good. We're really happy with the move.
Your predecessor left you in really good shape, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, Mike Rothman, the founder, really kind of the visionary genius behind the problem with property management and how hard it is for most companies to do, and really spotted an opportunity.
Well, I wanted to begin with giving our listeners an idea of what it is you do, what SMS Assist does.
Yeah.
Walk us through what it is.
Yeah. You know, if you're a company that has physical footprints, that might be a retailer with lots of stores, a restaurant chain, even one of our largest customers, JP Morgan Chase, which has thousands of bank branches, in those physical facilities, things break, right? Plumbing, electrical, roofing, flooring, and all of that work costs companies a lot of money. It's hard for them to manage. It's totally non-core and non-strategically differentiating, and it's super old economy. Nobody's really applied a technology approach, sort of an Uber-like approach to match supply and demand. So what SMS Assist is, we are the technology-driven leader in facilities maintenance and property management.
And so give us a sense of how that Uber idea would overlay onto what it is you do.
Yeah, so what we do is we go out and we find the supply side, the plumbing companies, the HVAC companies, the air conditioning companies, you name it, on the suppliers, and we create a value proposition for them. We say, look, we have a great technology platform. We can become your sales and marketing department and actually send you the work so you don't have to do sales and marketing. We use our technology to help you route and schedule your fleet of drivers much more efficiently than you can on your own. We give you technology to check in and do the job. We process your invoices. So we create, first and foremost, a real compelling value proposition on the supply side. And when we do that, we get to aggregate buying power or pricing. And then we go to the demand side, which are our large customers who have these big physical footprints. And we say, look, we can do this job at an average ticket cost that's lower than you can do it because we've built technology and we can ensure the quality and create a lot of accountability in the process. And so that's how we do it, right? We aggregate the supply. We create the technology linkage that allows the Uber driver in this scenario, which might be a plumber, to say, this is the job I'm going to do. Here's where I am. I'll be there at this time. Do the work. And then we inspect the work quality-wise, and then we pay the affiliate or the vendor, and we make sure the work gets done for our customer.
I think it's a very cool because not only are you saving these companies money that are your clients, but you're generating jobs for the people that are doing them, the plumbers, those folks. But then also you have people working for you, under you, and so there's like three different areas of savings.
Yeah, we always talk about what's our inspiring mission, and I think part of it is, you know, buildings matter in the world. These are habitats where people work, where they welcome their customers in, and making sure those buildings are kept in good repair, that those companies can be competitive, that's part of it. But you mentioned building the supplier side. You know, we take great pride in our stories about plumbing companies and electric companies that started out with one or two trucks now have grown to 30 trucks by working through SMS. And so building that part of the economy is also what gets us excited. And then, of course, we've got over 800 employees here in Chicago now and hiring fast. So we're creating part of the tech ecosystem here.
And, you know, along the lines of that economy, you're creating little economies, too, because I'm guessing where that plumber is located, that's a boost to that area of town.
Well, when you go from two trucks to 20, which happens a lot with us, right, you've created 18 more jobs, right, which are decent paying jobs. You've created an economic impact in that community. So absolutely.
You talked about the jobs, too, at your place. Anybody who's gone to the want ads and types in SMS Assist, you're hiring like gangbusters.
Yeah, we are. We've got, you know, three floors in the Hancock building now and busting at the seams. So space will be one of our challenges. But, you know, that's a good hyper growth problem to have. So we're hiring a lot. We're investing in a lot of talent. I'm excited about some of the recent hires we've made, if you want to talk about those.
Yeah, well, let's do. I know you have some announcements coming, and we don't want to give those away, but tell us about the talent that's behind the scenes.
Well, you know, one of the things that we have to do is really win that supply side, you know, the hearts and minds. And so building a really sophisticated supply chain is a huge part of that. We've hired a gentleman named Andy Dyer. Andy joined us from XPO Logistics recently, one of the leading third-party logistics companies. And Andy has spent his career building global supply chains. And so Andy's bringing a lot of experience and sophistication to us, really winning the hearts and minds of that supplier network. And also, we are a technology company at our heart. Of our 800 people, we have almost 200 who are technologists. So we're going to make an announcement, you know, soon about a really exciting new chief product officer we're bringing to town. I can share that he will be coming from Amazon, where he leads a very significant part of that business. He's coming to Chicago, joining our ecosystem here, and that's going to be exciting.
And again, just to repeat, he's coming from Amazon.
He is.
This is the disruptor in everything.
Absolutely.
And you're taking talent from them.
We are. And you know, when you think about is fixing buildings a sexy trade? Well, on the surface, it may not be, but it's a huge market and it's a big problem. And great technologists want to make the world better, right? They want to leave something better than they found it. So this is a very interesting problem, and that's why he's joining our mission.
It's a huge market. It made me think of a time when every one of these buildings or companies had their own, you know, janitor and had their own plumber and had right. their own. You're doing starting to do that for it, but I'm guessing that there are still a lot of buildings that still do that.
Yeah, the number one competitor is actually insourcing, companies who still have their own facilities maintenance capabilities, who are spending their money trying to do something that is important but non-differentiating. And so our value proposition has helped free up those dollars. We should be able to do it better at scale as a specialist, mm-hmm. free up those dollars so they can invest in things that make them strategically differentiated.
Let's talk a little bit about the bottom line. Every story I've read about your company, you are making money hand over fist.
Well,
is that, I mean, maybe yeah. that's a little hyperbole, yeah. but you're doing well.
Yeah, look, we're growing fast and we're profitable at this scale, which means it's a real business, right? Of course, it's a super competitive market. So the hand over fist thing, I would love that to be true. But what I look for is it a real business? Does it have real problems that it fixes? Are people willing to pay you to do it? And can you make money? And that's absolutely where SMS Assist is today.
And to have shout outs from Mayor Emanuel,
yeah.
Other leaders around the area, that must be good too, to know that you have the ear of the mayor and that he likes what you're doing.
Well, you know, one of the things that's exciting to me, a non-Chicago guy from the tech industry moving here, is I've been very, very impressed with the tech ecosystem in Chicago and the partnership between, you know, the city government and the private sector here. It's absolutely a hidden gem. Many people outside of Chicago don't realize what's happening here, but there's a lot going on, and I think the mayor and the city are really doing a good job creating that environment.
Funny you should bring that up, because I wanted to ask you about it. We're among the 20 finalists for the new Amazon headquarters.
Yeah.
Based on what you know of the ecosystem, based mm-hmm. on what you think our strengths and weaknesses are, what would you say about that?
I think on the strength side, you know, being in the middle of the country is advantageous. You know, you look at the Big Ten universities that are all within a couple hundred miles of Chicago, so you've got a really deep talent pool. That's also important to Amazon. The tech ecosystem here is growing, and so access to that type of talent. You know, I think we're very competitive in a lot of ways. I think on the weakness side, frankly, again, just we have to call it, you know, the overall tax environment in Illinois and some of the other things that are perceived about Illinois as a state from outside probably are doing a little bit of brand damage. But I think overall, if you think about where a great headquarters would be geographically, talent-wise, you know, access to the right type of people, I think we have a running shot.
You, as the CEO of your own company, I mean, you interact with people on a daily basis, not only inside but outside of your company. What do you hear from your employees about how they get around, whether or not we have decent transit for them, the amenities that employees want? I'm guessing you hear from them.
Yeah, I think if you start to look in the River North and West Loop areas of town, where a lot of the technology companies are, right, the Googles of the world, et cetera, I think those are amazing places. The two train stations enable easy access for people commuting in and out. The amenities that are going in over there built up around those companies, I think it's actually a great spot. I came from Texas, as you know, in the Austin area, and Austin is known as a tech city. And a lot of the ecosystem Austin had present is also present in this part of our city here.
Now, that's a really nice thing to hear, because oftentimes when we hear comparisons of tech communities, we don't hear that.
Well, I think, again, Chicago's building a brand, right? If you ask the average technology executive who's not from Chicago, name the big tech hubs, of course you'd get the Bay Area. Of course you'd get Austin. You would get Boston, New York. You wouldn't get Chicago.
Yeah.
But I, as an outsider coming in, have been surprised at, again, what a hidden gem it is here. And I think we need to make more noise about that.
How would we do that? How would we go about doing that?
Well, I think it's, you know, first of all, I think the city and the private-public partnership is making traction. You see things here like 1871, which is a big footprint in terms of, you know, that incubated space, that shared working space, et cetera. I think there are lots of ways that we can celebrate success stories. And, of course, SMS has the opportunity to be a big, well-known Chicago tech success story. We need more of those to happen.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. You have a background in cloud, in the cloud. You also have a military background.
Right.
First, the cloud. I mean, what from your background has helped prepare you for this moment as CEO?
Sure. You know, I was the guy, had the privilege of being the president and CEO of a company called Rackspace for a number of years. I spent the last decade plus there, was the CEO and president for the last 3 to 4 years. And Rackspace was really an early cloud pioneer and innovator. We got into cloud computing in 2007. In the early days, it was Rackspace and Amazon's Web Services as the two primary competitors in the space. We were also known as a real innovative service leader in our industry as well. So we grew Rackspace from nothing to, you know, over $2 billion in revenue, really on the back of technology innovation and having a client customer-centric culture that would just do things for our customers that others wouldn't do. And I think about the parallels to SMS Assist, right? It's a technology play. But in our industry, customer service is an afterthought. So when we combine the power of the leading technology with a great company culture focused on the customer, I don't think anyone can stop us. So there's a lot of parallels from Rackspace to SMS Assist.
And then your background, the military part of your background, how does that shape who you are as a CEO?
Yeah, you know, I was a Marine Corps infantry officer for a number of years, and it was a great privilege to serve in that. You know, the Marine Corps is a great organization. To me, you know, the discipline that you learn as a military guy, the attention to detail, the ability to influence and lead people, and you know, leadership is all about convincing people to follow you, right? Yeah. So I carry a lot of what I learned as a young Marine officer into the private sector. You know, my days are fairly fluid and crazy, but, you know, hey, I get up at 5 o'clock every morning and still try to get some exercise in. Mm-hmm. I try to remain self-disciplined in my own life. So a lot of what you learn in the military transcends and goes into business, you know, quite easily.
Oftentimes I ask folks for their CEOs for their advice on either their routine, their daily routine, and some say that they, you know, they jump right out of bed. Others have an exercise routine. You mentioned you do that. Yeah. What are the other things that get you centered for the day?
Yeah, you know, I do. I tend to be an early to bed, early to rise guy. So if you ask me to use my brain after 10:30 p.m., it's not going to work real well. So, you know, getting enough sleep and being able to wake up early, for me, early mornings are my most productive time. So I will get up and I will exercise to get my blood flowing. And then I get into the office very early when most people aren't there. And that gets me oriented toward what's the day like, what's the week like, what are my priorities, how do I have that think time. And after I can have some of that think time in the morning, then I feel much better prepared to engage and be productive in all the meetings and decisions that have to happen that day. So things like that.
The tax law is now in place. We're still kind of seeing that shake out. From your vantage point, how is that going to impact not only your company, but do you think the community, Chicago?
You know, it's funny. One of my old colleagues at Rackspace used to say, when you looked at our effective tax rate prior to this cut at the corporate level, we were paying, you know, 34-35%. And he used to have the saying, he said, you know, we fought a war with England at one point in time over taxation, and now the UK has a more competitive corporate tax structure than we do. We need change. And so I think overall this is about competitiveness. And I think having a lower corporate tax structure here will ultimately make us more competitive. I think in the very near term, the cash that this will bring back from overseas and the lower corporate cost structure is going to stoke M&A, mergers and acquisitions activity. We already see some of that taking place early in 2018. Some companies are choosing to bonus it out. Some will pay dividends back to their shareholders. I hope that most companies will reinvest it in R&D, reinvest it in jobs. That's what we all hope from it. But the bottom line for me is we need to be the most competitive place in the world if we want to draw the talent into the country, create the economic growth that we need to have. And I think cutting taxes overall is a good thing.
And hopefully in Springfield, they'll get their act together and start addressing some of these problems, because yeah. Time after time, we mentioned Amazon earlier, but time after time, that's always the factor when you hear a company doesn't come here or there's no expansion, is that atmosphere.
Yeah, I think unfortunately from outside of Illinois, the perception is, you know, frankly, it's a political mess. Mm-hmm. And companies view that as risk, and they view that as, is it a place that people would want to move if we want to bring talent into Chicago? So I do think our brand and the things that happen in Springfield are a net negative to drawing new business into Chicago. I think Chicago itself is doing quite well, and you see all the building going on around the river, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems to be a vibrant economy in the city. I wish we could straighten out some of the other issues in the state.
Oftentimes, I read about SMS Assist, and it's people have written that among the young companies in the city, the startups and others, it's one of the most likely to go public soon. What are the chances of an IPO?
Well, you know, 9 months in, right? Yeah. I don't have a crystal ball. I think we're growing fast. We're profitable at this scale. We address a huge market that has lots of room for growth. So some would say, hey, those are the hallmarks of an IPO-able company. Mm-hmm. Are we going to IPO? TBD. I think that is the sort of, you know, the betting wisdom that SMS would. But I am focused first and foremost on building a great company. Once we build a great company, we'll have options, whether they're IPO or something else.
Well, while you have your crystal ball out, can we talk a little bit about the future and what not only what disruption might look like for your industry, mm-hmm. but automation and robotics. Yeah. Are we going to see remote-controlled robots cleaning buildings? And what do you think the future is going to bring?
You know, it's a very interesting question because I think, you know, there are rumors that big retailers like Walmart that have huge store footprints are already deploying robots and pilots to come in and do the nightly cleaning of the floors that today a crew of maybe 10 or 15 people would be doing, you know, all night, overnight. Mm-hmm. So we will definitely see robotics and artificial intelligence and other things impact this industry. We already are. At SMS, we have this huge opportunity because we ingest so many data points about all these jobs in these buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, we're applying artificial intelligence to things like, you know, if we have 50,000 commercial air conditioning units in our system, we ought to know what breaks when, at what age, should they replace it, should they fix it again, et cetera. So we'll be applying, and already are, a lot of AI, a lot of machine learning. We'll have the chance to do, you know, Internet of Things. There's sensors that can go on this capital equipment, tell you what the noise is telling you. So lots of opportunity.
If the Roomba can do it, why can't this bigger space?
That's right. You know, think about the Roomba for Walmart, right? Yeah, a little bigger industrial grade, but it's happening.
Are you fearful that all of that automation and robotics will replace humans at some level?
I think this is one of the big tensions in our world right now. You know, there's a lot of debate, especially as a tech guy. Does technology create more value than it might displace in terms of people not having jobs? Mm-hmm. And I don't have the answer. I do think it is very disruptive. We know we will have to successfully re-engineer our education system to actually educate and train people for the jobs of the future. I don't see us making enough progress on that as a country. The automation of work is happening faster than us changing the way we're educating people, changing the way we're preparing people for the future. And that naturally creates dislocation and tension right now.
Well, it's wonderful meeting you, and enjoy the rest of the winter. Hopefully you won't get scared off before spring gets here again.
But I'll do my best to hold out.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Taylor Rhodes is the CEO of SMS Assist in Chicago. We're going to continue our conversation with Taylor after the bell this morning and post more of our interview with our podcast of the opening bell a little bit later on this morning. Make sure you learn more about SMS Assist at their website, smsassist.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here on our Monday edition of the opening bell, 540 now here on 720 WGN. The World Economic Forum wrapped up last week. A lot of things happening there. Of course, the end of the week capped off by a speech by President Trump. Heather Long is a business reporter and economics reporter at the Washington Post, and she is with us this morning, and Heather was at Davos. Heather, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve.
How was it?
Well, it was quite the week, 4 feet of snow to kick it off, so lots of quite a place for a bunch of CEOs from around the world and, of course, world leaders to be there. But I have to say, the reception for President Trump, people didn't think that that was his crowd, that this was a place where usually people who are very pro-trade, pro-globalization gather every year since the 70s. And so people were very apprehensive about President Trump coming with his America First message. But people were queuing. They were lining up almost like a rock concert 2 hours ahead of time to try to get into the room where President Trump delivered his address. There were rumors that people would walk out in protest. I sat towards the back of the auditorium and only two people walked out, both of whom were Americans. So, you know, overall, the Trump and his team, he brought the biggest delegation ever that the U.S. has ever had to the Davos Forum. And I have to say, he was on message, and his message was pretty well received. A lot of people saw it as opening the door to more collaboration around the world, particularly on trade. But as the Danish foreign minister said to me, he was like, you know, what I heard I like today, but is it going to be followed up with action?
Right, and that's some people are saying that as well, that this is sort of different from what he's been saying in other places. And so this was a speech, I'm guessing, designed specifically for this audience.
That's right. And as many people who follow Trump, he's very good at reading audiences. He's very good at tailoring his message to audiences. Certainly his economic advisor, Gary Cohn, who's very globalist, pro-trade, he definitely had a big influence on the speech. So we'll see. There was a noticeable change. This America First is not America alone was the key line in the speech. His team talked repeatedly about how they are open to doing trade deals, including trade deals with multiple countries. So Trump had always said, I only want to do deals with the U.S. and one other country. Well, he changed that message in Davos, saying that he was open to potentially doing trade deals with multiple countries. They stressed that a European Union-U.S. deal is still on the table. Again, does that actually mean it's going to happen? Who knows? But a lot of CEOs in the room noticed that change in tone, and they said they like it.
There was a little bit of boos that were there. I guess he, during the question and answer session, he said something about the media, negative. What was that like when that happened, and did we make too much of that?
You're right. Very few protesters at the speech, there were actually two lines that got booed. One was in the introduction for Trump. The man who had organized the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, said a line, something along the lines of, Trump's strong leadership has been subject to bias interpretation and being misunderstood. And the crowd really booed heavily at that line, feeling that it was pandering too much to Trump. Somebody who is sitting two down for me from Canada said it vocally, this is disgusting. And then when Trump in that Q&A, you're right, made that line where he said that he was actually describing that he felt he had a good relationship with the media until he started running for president and became president. And then he said he'd seen the nasty and the vicious side of media. And again, there was across the room, people from all different countries booing to that line. Several CEOs and world leaders afterwards that I was interviewing said, you know, that overall they felt Trump was polite, but they just thought that line that was out of line. He shouldn't have said that. That certainly doesn't score points with Europeans, Canadians, and actually Indians. The Indian Prime Minister came and spoke as well at Davos and really went out of his way to defend trade, defend free media, and send a message to the United States.
A lot happened at this meeting. Trump, but not the only world leader there, not the only big shot. What would you say are the headlines to come out of this meeting moving forward?
Yeah, so other than the trade, seeming like the U.S. is more interested in that, a lot of optimism around the world. There are 120 countries are doing better now economically than they were a year ago. And that was, so Europe, Asia, United States, South America, even Russia, which really struggled for the last several years economically, is on the rebound. So to see that kind of world synchronization economically it makes it a very optimistic time. Somebody compared it to, it feels like 2006. Now, of course, that was a very good year for the markets and economy. But, of course, you sit there and think, yeah, but 2 years later was 2008 and the big financial crisis. So there was a lot of chatter in the room. What are we missing? You know, this feels too good to be true. Are we too complacent about where we are right now? So that's a really fascinating part of the discussion that I think people will be reflecting on more. Europe really came out strong. France, Macron was there from France. The leader of Germany, Merkel, was there. Of course, Theresa May, the leader of Britain, and the Italian prime minister was there. They all spoke, with the exception of Theresa May. Italy, Germany, and France, it really sent a strong message to the United States. They all, in their speech, talked about the importance of global institutions, whether it's the World Trade Organization or the United Nations or NATO, and that they did not want to see the United States disrupt those organizations. There was also an undertone at the conference of, I think, was going to be a key theme in 2018. The economy is doing incredibly well. People are very happy about that. They're very happy to see U.S. leadership economically and what Trump is doing there. But particularly from Europe, Canada, and India, there's a sense that under President Trump, there's been some, one Indian leader put it to me, that the U.S., they feel, has abdicated its moral leadership in the world with some of the comments that Trump has been making, slamming and saying some very nasty criticism about some parts of the world, and that they really feel that the U.S. has stepped aside from its place in the world. And so there's these kind of dueling narratives going on, liking Trump on economics, really not liking him on some of his comments, particularly about Africa.
You moderated a panel on capitalism and inequality. Were those both hot topics at the Economic Forum?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those question marks that's lingering out there, one of those concerns, and that is, as we were talking about, the world economy is doing so well. So why is the middle class, let alone the working class and the poor, stagnating? You know, this is part of the reason President Trump was elected in our own country and in Theresa May in the United Kingdom, this feeling, and you can see it in the data, that wages have been stagnant for the middle class for over two decades. And there was, despite the fact that this is a great time to be a CEO of an investment bank or many, many firms around the world, those folks are making the 1% is doing very, very well. There's a sense of how do we make sure that that growth is shared? And it was noticeable that how much discussion there was. Now, what the solution to that is not always agreed upon. I didn't hear as many people as I would have liked talking about raising wages. So we keep waiting in the United States for more companies to raise wages. There was talk of something called a universal basic income. So this notion that it would be as if everyone, every adult American, would receive a Social Security check. So not just the elderly, but there's a proposal to, you know, to give everyone some form of income every month, particularly if we see mass layoffs. Can you imagine 25%? Are more of the country laid off as robots and automation comes in and takes over more jobs? So there's still a lot of concern about that, and no agreement on what the perfect solution is.
One of the tweets I saw from you, you were talking about, I think, one of the dinners that President Trump went to, and there were no female CEOs at that table. So as much as things change, they sort of stay the same, don't they, in that regard?
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. This was the first World Economic Forum. It's been going on since the late 70s, and this was the first time there were seven female co-chairs of the forum. So seven world leaders, women from all over the world, and so it was seen as a big symbol. From the United States, we had IBM CEO Ginni Rometty, and people really, really excited about this, excited about the symbolism of all these women leading this very important conference, and they did a great job. But when you look at the attendees at the forum, at this so-called powerful forum, only 20% were female. And then, as you said, one of the key meetings that happened during this forum was that President Trump took a minute to have dinner with European CEOs and then to talk to them about, you know, the future of the U.S.-EU relations. And unfortunately, all 15 CEOs were male. Although I have to give President Trump, the only female in the room was actually one of his cabinet secretaries. So, but it just underscores that there's still, the theme of the conference was inclusion. How do we get more inclusion in the world economy? And then some of that is about getting more women involved, and some of that is about getting more benefits to the middle class. And we have a long way to go in both those areas.
Heather, good conversation. Thanks for being with us this morning. And boy, those photographs of the drive in and drive out with the snow, it's a beautiful place to visit.
It was. 4 feet of snow is something.
All right, Heather. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye, Steve.
Heather Long is an economics correspondent at The Washington Post. You can follow her on Twitter and see some of these pictures and videos and more of her coverage of the World Economic Forum by Heather Long on Twitter. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures down 31 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We start a very busy week on the agricultural meeting calendar. And folks coming to Phoenix, Arizona for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association will be watching the markets today to see the reaction to the cattle on feed report issued last Friday. Friday afternoon, traders were calling the report bearish, saying feeder cattle could be limit down today. Live cattle could be at least $2 lower because the cattle on feed report came in with numbers bigger than expected. 8% increase in the number of cattle on feed. Placements of cattle in December up 1% over a year ago. Marketings in December down 90%. or I should say down 1% from a week ago. So cattle market will certainly be in focus today, and the grain market, weather in Argentina continues to be a factor. More dry weather expected to challenge soybean growers in Argentina. Now, what about the meeting schedule for this week? Well, starting on Wednesday, members of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association will be arriving in Phoenix, Arizona for their convention that will run through Saturday. At the same time, sheep producers will be gathering in San Antonio, Texas. And there, the American Sheep Industry Association will be holding its annual meeting at the same time. And then there's one other national ag meeting coming up this week, the National Association of Conservation Districts meeting in Nashville, Tennessee. Have a busy week. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, January 29th. The Commerce Department reports today on personal income and spending for December. Tomorrow, Standard & Poor's releases the S&P Case-Shiller Index of Home Prices for November, and the Conference Board releases the Consumer Confidence Index for January. Among earnings today, Lockheed Martin. Tomorrow, we'll see Oak Brook-based McDonald's. On Wednesday, Mondelez International. The jobs report comes out on Friday, the U.S. monthly jobs report. Those are the things that will drive business today and through the weeks and possibly even move the markets. Monday, January 29th, 2018.